welcome to the MacGuffin Men. This episode is brought to you by Wes Anderson, because not just anybody can get Bill Murray to look sad. And now, here are Alex and James.
Welcome, MacGuffin. I'm Alex. With me is James. Just want to say a quick thing off the bat. We debuted our video podcast last week, so if you're listening to this on your automatically updating iTunes or something like that, go to themacguffinmen.com, check out our first video podcast on 500 Days of Summer. Also email us at themacguffinmen@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at themacguffinmen. But yeah, and here we are for an audio podcast.
I like our video podcast.
That's good. I'm glad you like it, because you are 50% of it. So, or I guess 50% of the film discussion content. But yeah. So what's our topic today, James?
Wes Anderson.
What? I was told this was going to be an Owen Wilson career retrospective. Did I watch Drillbit Taylor again for nothing?
Nope. No one's ever watched that for nothing.
Yeah.
You watched that for life lessons.
Yeah.
Which one tried to kill himself, Owen?
Owen. Luke had alcoholism, like has battled alcoholism. Yeah.
Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah, no, I know. I don't know. I love both those guys too.
Yeah, me too. But do you know where they got their start?
It was kind of sloppy, but was it in a Wes Anderson film called Bottle Rocket?
It was. Yeah. What year's Bottle Rocket?
96.
Yeah, so it was based on a short film.
Mm-hmm.
And
their own short film.
Yeah. They're the same people.
Yeah.
Same story.
They made like a 13-minute black and white short film that got good reviews at Sundance, I think it was.
Okay.
And then they sort of managed to get $5 million or so out of James L. Brooks, who enjoyed it. And yeah, he sort of like guided them along the process of actually making a film.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Wes Anderson knew the Wilson brothers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Owen Wilson, later of, you know, Zoolander and Wedding Crashers fame, co-wrote Bottle Rocket as well.
Yeah.
They all grew up. Well, they're all from Texas. And I believe Wes Anderson and Owen Wilson met in university.
Go Texas.
Yeah. Texas forever.
Go Dillon High School.
Yeah. Yeah. But and then they just sort of started writing together, and they all lived together at one point, I think. Like them with Andrew Wilson as well, who's the oldest Wilson brother.
Right.
And who will appear in many of the movies we're talking about today.
Yeah. And so, yeah, this was really the start for all three of them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. How do you like Bottle Rocket?
I like it. Yeah. I like it quite a bit. I think it's very, it feels like it was made by young people, more yeah. so than, like, it really feels like a movie made out of inexperience, but it's also not, that doesn't mean it's bad, because I think it's good. I think it's very uneven, but...
yeah, that's what I was going to say. It feels really disjointed.
Oh, yeah. And everything about it, like, if you ask me to pick out a movie that looks like the 90s in indie, this is one of them.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a Richard Linklater early movie, like Slacker or something that was like 91. Yeah. And then 5 years later, you got Bottle Rocket. And, you know, just the way the characters are dressed, there's so much natural light used. And but it's not like it's not without Wes Anderson's flares that would end up showing themselves in later movies. Like,
yeah.
We get some of the very quick pans and stuff like that. Not very many, but
yeah.
You can really see the beginnings of Wes Anderson's style. But even apart from being interesting in that way, I think it's a funny movie. I think Owen Wilson's amazing.
It's funny, for sure.
Yeah.
And Martin Scorsese said it was one of his top 10 movies of the decade.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I don't know. I disagree with. I would probably disagree with if I put together a list of my favorite 90s movies, but...
Yeah, I would too.
I certainly see where his thought... Like, he seems like the type of person that's probably like me in that he gets excited about a new voice. And there's something definitely new about Bottle Rocket, particularly in 96.
And for the Scorsese perspective, I mean, it's... Bottle Rocket's about, you know, criminals or people who want to be criminals.
Yeah.
And it just seems like Scorsese makes so many movies about successful criminals, and this is just totally bumbling idiots trying to be criminals.
Well, do you know the story about what the script was initially?
No.
They initially wrote it as like a much more of noir, serious heist movie.
Okay.
And then Wes Anderson and I don't know how much influence Owen Wilson had on this decision, but Wes Anderson looked at the actors that they were going to have, which, you know, are their friends, Owen and Luke Wilson, Robert Musgrave. And was like, these guys can't be taken seriously.
Yeah.
And then, like, this is a comedy. And I think that's really interesting, particularly since, I mean, that that one decision must have had a huge effect on his entire career.
Yeah.
In that, I mean, outside of the fact that his career exists, you know, like if this is a serious movie, it's not well liked, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I was reading just kind of a lot of people's opinions about all the Wes Anderson movies and people talking about, you know, Life Aquatic or what other movie they don't like. They always say, oh, yeah, that one's down there with Bottle Rocket. Ugh. Yeah. But I don't know. I like it. And while rewatching all these movies again, it was probably the one that went up, in my opinion, the most.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think before I rewatched all these movies, it was definitely my second least favorite Wes Anderson movie.
Yeah, and I was kind of like, nah, good, but far from great. And, you know, cool. It's kind of establishing what's going to happen in his career. So that's kind of cool. But
yeah,
I do enjoy it on its own a lot more than I used to.
Oh, no, exactly. And I think, like, I mean, I mentioned already, like, I like both the Wilson brothers. I think Luke Wilson's good in this as well. But I think Owen Wilson's, like, so great.
Yeah.
And Dignan is, like, so humanized by Owen Wilson. And I think that's really cool. And yeah, the whole movie just sort of, like, there's, like, one continuous joke in the movie to me that's just sort of, like, it's like the kids from the Goonies grown up, except they didn't grow up mentally, you know, and that's what Dignan is to me.
They just got taller.
Yeah, exactly. And they're still trying to come up with schemes, like they don't know Sloth anymore.
And one of them broke his nose.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, and I think, you know, Dignan is really stunted as at an age, you know, and he's still just trying to come up with capers, but I really like it, and I think it's funny, and
yeah. Well, I'm sure we're going to talk more about it, and we're going to talk about kind of how all these movies are similar or different, but want to move on to Rushmore? What do you have anything else to say about
Rushmore? Well, we got to talk about how funny some parts of the heist are, right? Like, because this movie can made me laugh pretty hard a number of times. Like, all of the stuff with Kumar in the heist.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm sorry, man. When, like, he's just sitting on the couch or whatever. He's like,
yeah.
I can't do it. And he, like, just loses track of where he is.
Yeah.
All that stuff. And, like, Owen Wilson continually being, like, Kumar, you all right? Like, just, like, he's running up the stairs. Kumar, check in. Like, it's been 3 seconds since he's seen Kumar.
Well, yeah, and a lot of the comedy stuff works so well that, it's tough to think of this movie as a fully serious one.
No, exactly.
Because there are good, I mean, as you said, he gets humanized pretty well, and there are some good dramatic parts that I think hit home pretty well, but...
Yeah. The, like, little bags of money. Oh, my God. Do you have any bags for, like, dictionaries or atlases? And then when he hands Luke Wilson the money, he's like, these are tiny bags. Yeah.
The robbery scenes are great. I mean, like, robbing the house, which ends up being, you know, more of a test than a real robbery or burglary or whatever.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the bookstore. Yeah.
Very, super funny.
Very funny.
And I really like the ending too, like the last scene in prison. I think that's really great. And I mean the last joke of the movie when that Dignan's like gonna try and break them out or you know, get them to break him out. I think that's funny, and I don't know, I think the movie wraps up really well.
Yeah.
Which I think is a trend we'll see in Wes Anderson movies, even ones I don't particularly care for that much. But
right on.
Yeah. But 1998, Rushmore
was made.
Which apparently had a screenplay that was finished before Bottle Rocket.
Yeah.
Which I just learned today and found that interesting.
Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah.
No big deal. Yeah, well, it's a lot more personal. I mean, we see the beginnings of what is going to be, you know, so much of Anderson's style in Bottle Rocket. But in Rushmore, it's a lot more personal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot more, you can tell that it's, you know, very much influenced by their lives. And, you know, they went to prep school. Owen Wilson, who also co-wrote this one, and Wes Anderson. And it's, you know, they're young. I mean, the main character, Max Fisher, is obviously younger than the characters in Bottle Rocket. He's still, grade 10, I think. So, you know, it's personal. And they go back to kind of their teenage years, and we get... you know, just a lot more focused on who they actually are. I mean, Bottle Rocket is kind of his youth as a filmmaker, but Rushmore is really about his youth as just a human being.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. And I mean, Jason Schwartzman tells this extremely long, rambling story about how he got the part. But it's sort of like the reason he ended up getting the part all boiled down to the fact that him and Wes Anderson could have a conversation and seem to still be very good friends to this day.
Yeah.
And like the conversation started on something as innocuous as the shoes that Wes Anderson was wearing that day. Like, and then they talked about shoes and then they talked about Pinkerton. And then that's basically how Jason Schwartzman got the role. And yeah, I think that says a lot to what you're saying in that I feel like he just sort of identified with Jason Schwartzman and that's how he got the role, because it's like, well, this is very much a combination of me and Owen Wilson.
Yeah.
Like, because, you know, there are elements to both of them. And, Wes Anderson is not the sole writer on any of his movies. But, yeah, and I definitely see what you're saying in that it does seem very personal. And in a way, I didn't know before actually researching. Like, this has been one of my favorite movies for, like, a decade now.
Yeah.
But I've never really done any research on it. But, yeah, I found all those parallels that you've mentioned, yeah.
It's really good. And I knew this and I watched it again in some parts. I'm like, wow, you are a very well-made movie.
It's a great, I say definitely capital G great movie.
And, yeah.
It's been like one of the movies I will always list or have always listed as one of my favorites, since, you know, I started thought about it.
Yeah.
And it feels like one of the few from that list that will definitely still be in the list, like when I'm 80. Yeah. You know, like every girlfriend I ever have will be forced to watch this movie. Like, it's so great.
Yeah.
So
what do you like so much about it?
Is everything a good answer? No. Yeah. I feel like,
okay, moving on.
Yeah.
Next film.
No, it's, I mean, it has so many things that just appeal to me in general. Like, it's a teen movie. It's not, you know, Can't Hardly Wait, but it's very, it's still at its core a teen movie, coming of age. It's about things that I enjoy, like the idea of, well, I mean, the key line in the movie is, you know, she's my Rushmore. You know, find something that you love and do that for the rest of your life. But it's sort of about, it's more about actually dealing with the loss of that thing.
Yeah.
Which is sort of really cool because, you know, people will think that, you know, I found this one thing, I can just do this for the rest of my life, but you're going to continually lose that thing. You're going to have it taken away from you and you're going to have to adapt. Like, Max loses his place at Rushmore. He loses his mom early in the movie. He's very much dealing with that throughout the movie. Bill Murray's character, Herman, loses his wife. Then he loses, what's her name? Olivia? No.
That's the actress.
Yeah, yeah.
Miss Cross?
Miss, okay, we'll go with that. Miss Cross and Miss Appleby, isn't that it? Because it's Edward Appleby.
There you go.
Who's her ex-husband. And she loses her husband. And
where did I get Cross from?
I don't know. You could be correct. Maybe that's her, you know, that's not her married. Maybe she didn't take his name.
Okay.
Anyways, yeah, and it's just all about, you know, losing things and adapting to the pain of that loss. And I think it's this really cool theme throughout the movie and, just everything about the movie sort of ties back into that, and it's sort of like grasping continually throughout the movie. They're grasping at straws to get back these things. Like,
yeah.
Max keeps trying to get back to Rushmore, or Herman is helping him, you know, build the aquarium to get back with Miss Appleby / Cross.
Yeah,
you know, and I don't know. It's just everything. It's a really tight movie. Like, it's really tightly scripted, and yeah, just great. And all, like, almost perfectly acted throughout.
Yeah. You know. Well, yeah, I mean, every movie's obviously about a struggle, but we don't really see Max happy very often.
Nope.
I mean, we get the intro.
Even after he writes and directs a hit play.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we get the dream sequence right off the start where he solves the math thing. And, you know, he's happy in that fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, as a teenager, I think you spend a lot of time kind of fantasizing about who you want to be or who you want to grow up to be and things like that.
Absolutely.
And then once we get out of that fantasy, we get that intro kind of montage where it shows everything that he is involved in, all the extracurricular stuff, but he's already in trouble for his low grades, and then things don't work out with the teacher that he falls in love with, and then he kind of gets some things going with Bloom, Bill Murray's character, but then they end up fighting, mm-hmm. and, you know, the other kids at school don't like him, and he's embarrassed of his father because he's just a barber and not, you know, a neurosurgeon or whatever claims that he is. And yeah, he's just really struggling this whole movie, and the ending isn't terribly negative, but it's, I don't know, not the most positive outcome.
Well,
either.
You know, not everybody doesn't get what they want. That's basically...
Or at least not what they want or what they thought they wanted near the start of the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that goes back to the thing I said. It's not so much about actually finding that thing you love and doing it for the rest of your life. It's adapting to when that thing gets taken away from you.
Yeah.
And that's why I think this movie is so much better than it could have been, you know, had they just stopped at... You know, found my Rushmore. Okay, I'm at Rushmore forever. You know, and I think that's what makes it so much better than other movies. You know, that deal with the same subject matter.
Yeah,
and I mean, it all comes together in that last scene with the Faces song "Ooh La La," which the chorus is "I wish that I knew what I knew now when I was younger."
Yeah,
which is obviously the perfect song because that's entirely what the movie is about.
And a big part of it is the relationship between Max and Bloom, Bill Murray, yep, and Jason Schwartzman.
Yep.
And
which is a 50-year-old and a 15-year-old, you know?
Yeah, and just reading about them, they kind of said, Wes Anderson and Owen Wilson said that was one of the things they really, that was kind of one of the first nuggets that they had to build around. They wanted this young, you know, teenager and this middle-aged guy to kind of have their paths cross and become equals.
Mm-hmm.
And we do see that at a lot of points. Yeah. And, you know, Max doesn't really fit in with people his age, and he's always trying to, you know, fit in with older people, the teacher and Bloom, and speaking up to them and things like that. And, yeah, just the relationship between Bloom and Fisher, for me, is what makes this movie.
Oh, it's so entertaining. And
yeah.
I mean,
when they get along and when they don't get along.
That you don't hate Max Fisher shows how good Jason Schwartzman is in this movie.
Yeah.
And I think you can say the same for Herman, although it's easier to hate Herman. But I think, like, Bill Murray's awesome in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, we're fairly big fans of Billy. But, And he liked the script so much. Like when he got the script or something, he said he would do it for free.
Yeah.
Like he told his agent he liked it so much that he would do it for free and ended up writing a check, blank check for Wes Anderson when the studio wouldn't clear a shot involving a helicopter.
Yeah.
Which I found very cool.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Doesn't really fit in with the general image people have of Bill Murray. But
you don't think so?
I don't think people would see him as a caring in that way. You know?
Yeah. I think it's something he's involved in, so he's willing.
Okay, that's right. Yeah.
We talked about Bill Murray a little bit in one of the video podcasts that I don't think anyone will have seen by this point.
No, I don't think it comes out till October.
But
our thoughts were trenchant.
Yes, they're brilliant. we were talking about why people like Bill Murray, and I don't want to, you know, rehash it all, obviously, but...
Or pre-hash it.
Pre-hash it. Nice, the rare pre-hash. Yeah. But we get... Max and Herman are kind of just the, you know, two sides of the same coin, really.
Yes. I think so.
Yeah, and, you know, when they get along so well, it's because they have so much in common. When they, you know, fight, it's because they fall in love with the same woman. And again, just because they have so much in common, that's hard to deal with sometimes when you run into someone like that. And, yeah, I don't know. Their relationship to me is what makes this movie.
That's certainly what... Definitely first watching the movie, that was definitely what got me into the movie. And that's just sort of, I'm sure I've seen this movie at least 25 times now. And it's just over the years, I've found new things and just continue to think about it and still like it more and more.
And as you said, I mean, it's a coming of age movie and it's cool to see this interaction between, you know, someone coming of age and someone who's already there.
Yeah.
I mean, we kind of see Max dealing with his future self in a way and he's not happy with it a lot of the time. And so he's kind of negotiating how his future is going to be and who he's going to become.
Yeah. And Herman's kind of doing the same thing too. It's not like Herman is the same person at the beginning of the movie as he is at the end.
For sure.
Yeah. So it is coming of age for both of them. Just, you know, different kind of coming of age, I suppose.
Yeah. And Max is such an interesting character too, because he's so ridiculous. I mean, no one's like this kid.
No. And if I met a kid, like I've said this for years, if I ever met Max Fisher, I would hate him.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of people would share that, you know?
Yeah, and I feel...
Because he's not even he's not a good person either.
No, and he's...
He's an annoying person who is also not a good person.
And he's clever, but not funny.
Yeah.
Like, he takes everything way too seriously. Yeah. But I saw Owen Wilson said that one of the things he wrote into the script, one of the things he saw himself was just this love of older women that he had when he was younger.
Okay.
And obviously that's a very big plot point in the movie. But one of the things that I like is that, you know, it's kind of this fantasy, I guess, when you're younger and you do have an attraction to an older woman, it's just, oh, it's my age. You know, if I were older, this wouldn't be a problem. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things we get with Max is that he, you know, doesn't act his age. He is older and he is more, you know, he does seem older. He does seem more intelligent, but that's still not enough. Like, he still, I feel like even if he was older, it wouldn't work between mm-hmm. him and the woman he's fallen in love with.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Yeah, I don't know. I like that a lot because I think it goes back to the point where, you know, I can see their frustration. Oh, you know, when they were younger, oh, if I were older, this wouldn't be an issue. But, you know, we kind of see that played out and it still is an issue. And
yep.
it kind of addresses some of those feelings that you would have had when you were young and that, you know, it's not just the circumstance. There is still other things in the way. And, you know, you can't blame everything on just the circumstance, and you have to address what it is, you know, with you. And,
yeah.
you know, we see Max deal with that a lot.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Another thing, I mean, it's a pretty obvious quick thing, but just sort of the replacement of the mother as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very often what an older woman in a movie will stand for. And that's very much what it works for here as well. I agree with your point.
Yeah, no, sure. no, but the mother is, she's not even talked about that much, but we get it really early on and it kind of sets the tone for who Max is and, mm-hmm. you know, kind of a lot of his relationships going yeah. forward in the movie.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, in a movie about loss, that's probably the biggest loss.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody's dead significant other, you know, like
yeah.
Edward Appleby as well. But Miss Cross isn't focused on as much.
Yeah. Well, and just one other thing about him kind of, you know, trying to fix himself and it not just being just his age that is the issue here. I read a review that said, they're talking about Wes Anderson's, you know, writing and direction for this movie, and particularly in regards to the Max Fisher character. And they said, he perfectly captures the poignancy of a character who understands his failings, but hasn't yet the emotional resources to conquer them. And I just thought that was a great review because, you know, to me, that's so much of what this movie is that he is so smart in so many ways and so intelligent, but there's just not that maturity there for him to deal with it. And I think, you know, with the Wilsons and Wes Anderson, they were probably very intelligent young people, you know, to get a career started that early. They probably, you know, were doing things in their youth. But, and I think that's kind of a, you know, that must have been something, I obviously can't speak for them, but that must have been something they ran into. And, you know, they think, oh, I'm so much smarter than these people around me. I must be able to achieve, you know, more and, you know, women and, you know, all this stuff, but there still is a point where you hit a wall until you have matured. It doesn't matter how intelligent you are or how well organized or how smart or anything, you have to grow up at a point to get there, you know? Yeah. And it's weird because that goes hand in hand, and, you know, Sick Transit Gloria is another big part of this, and it's about how glory fades and things get worse, but, you know, you have to grow up at the same time, you know, things come with age, but they also diminish with age, and I think that that really shows up with Herman and Max. They both have things going well for them, but they also both have things going terribly for them, and they both are still struggling with them throughout the whole movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree. And I mean, like, there's a huge step up in visual style in this movie as far as, you know, the comparison between Bottle Rocket and Rushmore.
Yeah.
Just visually, this movie is like, I don't know. I can't even imagine what it must have felt like watching Rushmore in 1998. It's like, this is new, you know? And I mean new in a very, you know, qualified sort of way, in that Wes Anderson, you know, has built his career on reusing old techniques.
Yeah.
But it just sort of, I don't know. I feel like if I was 25 or 26, I suppose, watching Rushmore in 98, I would lose my fucking mind, you know, like, I would be like Martin Scorsese was after watching Bottle Rocket, you know, like that. You would have had to deal with furious texting from me, like, go see Rushmore.
Yeah, you know? But no, he really does find himself visually.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's spot on, but as far as
and just
everything else about it, too, he matures so much between the two movies.
Yeah.
And I do like Bottle Rocket, as I said, but yeah, he just really, really comes into his own in Rushmore.
Like, Bottle Rocket, the ideas are there. Everything's there, like the pop music, the Mark Mothersbaugh score, which was, you know, a late addition. Everything is there in Bottle Rocket. Rushmore is where it's like, this guy has control over all those cool ideas.
And as you said, it's just a tight movie. Like, everything's just tightened up. Everything, and You'll probably be able to speak to the visual aspects of Wes Anderson better than I can, but this is a recurring thing. This certainly isn't Rushmore, but this is the first time I think you really, really see it to this degree. Is everything is perfectly in place.
Like, yeah.
All the shots are framed perfectly. Every prop, everything about the set.
It's so much going on in the background.
So much going on, but without it looking sloppy and busy and just hectic. Like, you're still very focused. And I don't know. Actually, they said this about Rushmore. They said they wanted to make it kind of like a Roald Dahl movie, this kind of heightened reality. And I that's so obvious. It's not ridiculous and off the wall and crazy, but it's, you know, it's fantastic, you know, and it's this kind of unrealistic way. But these characters are so, I don't want to say real because no one's like Max, but they're still so grounded in the emotion of it.
They're relatable, you know, like the things they're dealing with. It very much in movies like this where you can't necessarily identify with the actual person. You tend to identify with what they're going through. Like, you know, it's even something as simple as like Leslie Knope. I can't identify with her on Parks and Rec, but I can identify with many of the things she goes through, you know, even if it's in some abstract way. And that's, you know, the same thing with Wes Anderson movies in general, particularly Rushmore, because, you know, there's just such human things. Like wide reaching human things.
And we said Bottle Rocket started off Wes Anderson, obviously, and the Wilson brothers. This was the big start for Jason Schwartzman.
It's his first role.
Like, this is from, you know, 100%. This is his first thing.
He didn't want to audition for this role. Like, he wanted to be a musician, and it was just sort of his cousin, Sofia Coppola, moderately famous director herself, daughter of Francis Ford. She sort of introduced him to a casting agent at a party, and, you know, Jason Schwartzman just happened to be kind of like Max Fisher in the way he dresses and stuff like that. But, I don't know. It's a very interesting story that Jason Schwartzman tells, but it's super long.
And this also kind of was the resurgence for Bill Murray.
It's where, people generally define this as the beginning of the second career of Bill Murray. And I mean, you can see things leading up to it, like Quick Change is in the early 90s. And I mean, isn't a great movie, but you can see sort of the beginnings of him playing the sad clown, in that he's literally playing a sad clown in Quick Change. But
I haven't seen it.
It's worth seeing. Okay. But yeah, I mean,
okay.
Certainly, this is where the idea of Bill Murray, dramatic actor, begins. You know?
Which we all love.
Yes.
Thank you, Wes Anderson.
We all being both of us.
And Rushmore. Ready to move on?
Yeah.
Ready to drop some T-bombs?
Yeah.
So next is Royal Tenenbaums.
Yep.
Which...
2001.
Yes.
Not a Space Odyssey.
No. Which I saw in...
It's an Archer Avenue Odyssey.
Which I saw in theaters and really liked at the time. And... have grown to like more and more.
Really? Okay. See, this is the movie that watching it again really took a step backwards.
Yeah.
I don't think this is a particularly like well-written movie, I feel like. Yeah. I feel like the things that are great about this movie, visually, it's amazing. Like, everything we said about Rushmore takes a huge step up for Royal Tenenbaums. And I think, like, you know, he had control of the style in Rushmore and Royal Tenenbaums. He's like, yeah, look what I can do now, you know? And visually, the way the story is told, stylistically, the use of music is amazing. Pretty much everything technical in this movie is phenomenal. I just feel like everything is so surficial, I guess. Is that a word?
Surficial?
Like the surface, on the surface? And
I'm going to say it's not, but you might be superficial.
We're MIT students. We get to make these things up. But no, it's just sort of like, I don't know, something about it, watching it again. And I watched it 3 times this past week just because I was like, do I really not like this movie anymore? But because I loved it so much when I first watched it and did until this past week. But and there are things I still love about it. Like if you were like, hey, let's watch Royal Tenenbaums after this, I'd still say yes. But I just feel like now I really overrated it in retrospect.
Yeah, I guess, well, I saw what I was, 13 or 14. So
it was the first Wes Anderson movie you saw, correct?
Probably.
And same for me, definitely.
Yeah. And so... that was when I was, you know, didn't know that much about movies. So I feel like watching it again after that, I, you know, learned how to watch a movie better. And I wouldn't have appreciated the visuals at all the first time and would have been
I certainly wouldn't have either. I feel like watching it then, and I mean, for both of us, because, you know, similar ages, I didn't see it in theaters, but I saw it like a year or two after. And it, very much, and I feel like this is something that a lot of people our age could say is that we saw it, saw something we loved about it, couldn't necessarily define what it was, but definitely were like, I love this. I want more. Let's go rent Rushmore.
You know? Yeah. And I feel like one day I probably won't like this movie that much because when I'm not.
I still think it's good. Yeah. You know, I should say that.
Yeah. Well, when I watch it and I think about it, it seems so overdramatic and pretentious and stuff like that. But so I can see maybe one day I won't like it as much either. Mm-hmm. But I haven't seen it that many times. Maybe that's part of it too. But yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you love about it?
It's funny. I think it's really funny.
I agree.
And yeah, I maybe the drama, when I think about it, is a little heavy-handed. But when I watch it, at the time, I'm really into it.
Yeah.
Gene Hackman's phenomenal.
Yeah, he's so good. So good.
Fantastic. Yeah. And this goes for...
Well, I mean, we've talked at length about how much we love Gene Hackman. Yeah. And I think we've discussed his role in this movie at length in our previous podcast on The French Connection.
Yeah.
So check that out.
I'm not going to dwell on that. Also, I'll say this once to get out of the way. Boo Angelica Houston. And that goes for every movie I've ever seen her in.
Okay. I don't agree with that. Did you see 50-50?
No.
She's amazing in 50-50.
50-50.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's just talk smack about one of the better movies last year.
That I haven't seen.
Yeah, exactly. A movie you would like.
I like the whole storybook approach, which is something we get, you know, more than once in the Wes Anderson filmography.
Narrated by Alec Baldwin. You like that?
By Alec Baldwin, I enjoy. Yeah, I don't know. Tons of stuff based on J.D. Salinger works, which I'm a big fan of J.D. Salinger. That probably helps, too, even though I wouldn't have read it at the time and liked it the first time through. I like all the stuff with the kids, like when they're young.
Oh, man, the first, like, 6 minutes of this movie are perfect. Like
The smart kid stuff really totally works for me.
Everything to Hey Jude, you know, before young Balmer lets go of Metaphortica, as I've taken to calling him, lets him fly away. Like just right into the Hey Jude chorus. It's so great.
Yeah.
That whole sequence is just perfect.
Yeah. I saw Jason Bateman of Arrested Development.
Yep.
Said this, said Arrested Development was... The Royal Tenenbaums shot like Cops.
Okay.
Said to get put in there.
Yeah, I can see that.
Again, the music in this one.
And Mitch Hurwitz said, like, after he saw the Royal Tenenbaums, he was like, oh, that's what I was kind of going to go for.
He said he almost wasn't going to do Arrested Development because this would have been too close. Pagoda's funny to me.
Yep.
And yeah, the heavy suicide stuff, usually I kind of shy away from that stuff. I think it's a little too easy, but somehow this one works for me.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's all about, it very often with those things, it depends on how the sequence itself is done, like how either, even if you don't show it, they do in this movie, but if you don't show it, you know, leading up to and afterwards, or if you do show it, like in this movie, the way it's done, and I feel like that's a very good sequence, and the way they're rushing him to the hospital as well is really great. The way the music is used in that scene is great.
And I like a lot of Luke Wilson's character throughout this whole thing.
Yeah.
Because I think he's probably the best of the kids.
As far as like the best person?
I just mean the best story.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. And I think he's the best person definitely too.
Yes, probably.
And he might have my favorite non-Gene Hackman line in the movie, which is the when Raleigh St. Clair, played by Bill Murray, is like, I think Margot's seeing another guy or something, and Luke Wilson's like, so what do you want to do? Find the guy and get him and like punches through glass. Yeah. I think that's so funny.
And all the montages and like quick music stuff in this works for me.
Yeah.
And
the sequence when Margot shows up to pick up Balmer from him wherever he docks or whatever, set to These Days by Nico. I think that's the best sequence Wes Anderson has done. As far as like a minute of filmmaking, I think that's perfect. And I was reading that leading up to what?
That is remember what I was gonna say.
Okay. when Wes Anderson was thinking about making this movie, one of the first thoughts he had was building that scene specifically around that song. And I think it works so perfectly with the way, like, even just the way the camera tracks in on Luke Wilson when he's still sitting and like another strings hit in on the song, and it's just perfect, and I think it's so great.
I was thinking of all the stuff between Gene Hackman and Ben Stiller, particularly about his dead wife.
Gene Hackman saying, I'm sorry about your mother, she was a terribly attractive woman. God, it's so brutal. No,
all that stuff. And I don't love Ben Stiller in this one. I don't think he really, like, detracts from the movie or anything, but I don't super love him. But all the stuff between him and his dad kills me.
The part when
oh, yeah, we got another body buried. Yeah, like, it's so cold. And again, like Arrested Development, it's always, like, Tobias talking about Michael's wife. Like, yeah, just so exactly. insensitive and cold.
Yeah, that's true. And to speak up, you know, in a pro Ben Stiller voice again, the scene when I forget what Gene Hackman or what Royal says to get Chaz to storm out, but when he's having like a talk with all the kids, and you know, as Ben Stiller's like storming out of the room, Gene Hackman holds out his hand, and Ben Stiller just like slaps it a couple times. It's so funny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I don't know. I could probably talk about Royal Tenenbaums for a long time, and I feel like it's always going to have a place close to my heart.
Okay, that's fair. I feel it'll definitely have a place close to my heart as well, and I agree with the things you said about it. And again, I think stylistically, this movie's pretty incredible and, like, great. There are just some things that I don't feel really resonate with me anymore. But I do think Royal, particularly, is a character that really feels... I don't know if you can call him unique, but feels like something I won't see again, yeah. You know, something I haven't seen before and something I won't see again.
Yeah.
You know? Just I'm sure Gene Hackman has a big part in that. But yeah, just the way like he's so mischievous all the time. Like just the way like all the looks on Gene Hackman's face throughout this movie, like whenever they're, you know, like playing dice or something, yeah. Like, he's having so much fun.
And when he gets called out for his fake sickness and just get like, he just doesn't even admit it. Just gets, oh crap, gets his stuff and just starts leaving. Like the jig is up and he knows it. Yeah. And that's all there is.
I'm having the time of my life, like mucking about with the, you know, loving every minute of these, this damn crew or something like
that. Yeah. And when he says, these last 6 days have probably been the best of my life. And then Alec Baldwin says right after saying that, he realized it was true. That part to me is super sweet and really sums him up. Like he's just been lying through his whole life. And then he gets to this point where he's trying to get this fake sympathy. And then he understands that, you know, it should be real sympathy. Like he actually is as sad as he wants people to believe.
Yeah, I agree. And that is one of my favorite moments in the movie, particularly one that relies very little on actual editing other than, you know, putting in Alec Baldwin's voice. And, you know, just another quick pro Gene Hackman, just the way he plays that is, that seems like something that would be very difficult. Like knowing this narration is going to be over you and, you know, conveying that properly. And he does a great job there. And I mean, thinking about the movie, watching it, you would feel like a lot of this was built in editing. But looking through the script, like the actual shooting script, like everything was timed out like it ends up in the movie. And I think that's very interesting because it feels like a movie where a lot could have been settled in editing, but it was just this very, very tight vision. And and I think it works more often than it doesn't, for sure. I mean, a common thread in these movies is... my least favorite part of them is the writing. But, and it's just sort of like over the years I've realized I don't like the writing in this movie as much as I maybe thought.
Okay.
But,
anything else?
Although this is possibly like the most highly praised of his movies, of Wes Anderson's movies, particularly for writing, because this is the one he got nominated for an Academy Award for.
Yeah. I feel like Rushmore might be the one that's kind of his... will be seen as his magnum opus, depending on what
it
else
depends
he does,
who you ask. But... I really feel like it depends who you ask, because... I see Rushmore and Royal Tenenbaums very much as sort of like a Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction kind of thing, where Reservoir Dogs comes out. You know, you have more names in Reservoir Dogs than you do in Rushmore, but still the same type of thing happening. You know, you've got your Harvey Keitel, your Bill Murray, and it's just sort of like, wow, this is a new voice. This is really cool. I want to attach myself to the next thing.
Yeah,
this person
it just
does.
Kind of blows the doors off. And
it's the same way that Pulp Fiction was received. It's sort of like, wow, we miss Reservoir Dogs. We have to look at Pulp Fiction this way. And that's sort of the same way the Royal Tenenbaums is treated as well.
Yeah, and I feel that's actually a good comparison that I never considered, because I think the second of those two movies is always kind of the bigger, more ambitious one with more going on, obviously.
Which it is in both cases.
Yeah, that's what I mean. The second one, and that's why it's a good comparison. I mean, it's a lot more going on, and I think they both hit the nail on the head.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not to say either, you know, I feel like if I were to pick between Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction, I feel like I would say Pulp Fiction's a better movie. But, not always the case. So.
Anything else about the Tenenbaums?
No. All right, that's the end of part one. Be sure to check back next week when we'll talk about the rest of Wes Anderson's movies and look ahead to Moonrise Kingdom. Also, be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com, and check out our first video podcast, which is about 500 Days of Summer. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com, or follow us on Twitter at themacguffinmen.